Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on December 7th, 2022, a day that will live in infamy from 1941. Okay, Pearl Harbor Day. I hope we all remember that. All right, and it doesn't get lost in history. I hope schools teach the history of it very well today. And I guess it's also a good day because I've got my old friend Hassan Davis here. Okay, Hassan is the CEO of what is called Hassan Davis Solutions. But Hassan, my friend, is a hope dealer. Okay, he's committed himself to improving the lives of children and youth as a speaker at various events in education all across the country. He's an author, man with a bachelor's from my friends over at Berea College, and also a law degree from the University of Kentucky. Okay, and he focuses on youth violence prevention, juvenile justice reform, go right down the list. Okay, he's just a great guy, and he has what he calls his H-O-P-E, Hope Framework. All right, we're going to talk to him about his newest book, which is called The Race. We're going to talk about all the stuff he's been doing since his last visit here and how perhaps you might want him to get visit your school or institution or whatever, your association, and have him talk to you about all this because he really is a dynamic individual, to say the least. I'll bring him on in just a second. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, and that's where everything that we do just happens to be. Our magazine, Equity and Access, is over there. Just click on the cover. Everything about SEL, everything about teacher retention, all of our podcasts are over there, plus all the work we do in Equity and Access. It's all at ace-ed.org, and I do hope you take a minute, more than a minute, actually, and go over there and see all the stuff and enjoy it. We change the things every day, so please go over and enjoy what we do at ace-ed.org. And without further ado, here's my friend Hassan Davis. Hi, buddy. How you doing? Good morning, Larry.
I'm good. Good morning. Good morning, Larry. How you doing?
And I'm all right. I'm all right on a kind of a rainy day here in the great state of Maine. How's life in Kentucky today?
Life is good. Life is good. Can't complain.
How's the weather?
Same. Rainy, dreary, cold. Yeah. But, yeah, it's winter.
Yeah, but it's winter, but your winter down there in the great state of Kentucky, the great Commonwealth of Kentucky, I believe it is, actually it's going to be a lot different than our winter
right
here in Maine, so I kind of envy you that.
You're
my friend.
You're right.
Yeah. we can start. Wait, by the way, tell Dreema, your good wife, I said hello. Okay, I miss her. How's
I'll do
she
that.
Doing? Absolutely. How's she doing?
She's doing wonderful. Doing great. Yeah, you all probably should have a conversation, but she has kicked her whole program up two more notches at least, so... Yeah, incredible work going on.
Tell her to pop me an email. That's the easiest way that I'll absolutely get it and respond, okay? Do that.
Okay, I'll do that. I'll do that.
Larry at ace-ed.org. Okay, you know how to get me. You know that. Okay.
Yep.
Anyway, all right. I want to talk to you. Let's just talk it generally, okay? Catch up for a few minutes. What's going on the last year, your last visit? I know you wrote the book. Talk about all the things you're doing,
yep,
just generically.
Sure. Broadly, you know, well, you know, when COVID finally stopped being the life-threatening pandemic, things opened up again. So last year, I spoke, you connected me with the folks at AESA.
Right.
And I spoke last December about this time at their national conference. And that audience.
And that's, I think
really,
that's going on this week. I think you're right about it being just about this time of year. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and that's actually here in Atlanta. I'm actually in Atlanta with Dreema today, and I think it's going on here. But they were great hosts, and the folks really connected. And so the last year, really, once things opened up, I have been all over the country working with education service agencies. That became a really big part of my portfolio as schools started to get back into real time, full, you know, in person, and. And it's been great, great connection. I think that, you know, my message and their work have lined up really well. And then I've done a lot of work with using the Hope curriculum. I actually built the Hope curriculum, Humanity, Optimism, Perspective, and Empathy, to support the Nebraska Department.
Yep.
Yeah, the Department of Nebraska Department of Probation and the courts. They said they wanted to do something more creative and innovative to get their probation teams connected with the folks that they serve in a way that was more of a relationship, you know, transformational instead of transactional. And we developed that over the last year and implemented it and has had some great success. And so I'm excited to see, especially agents, organizations like that wanting to put more humanity. And you talk about SEL, you use a social emotional framework in the conversation. So it's great to see, especially like probation and parole courts wanting to find their humanity when they do the work for those who have been most challenged. Yeah, it's been great.
That's wonderful. And again, I just want to say it's HassanDavis.com. Please go over there. Check it out. HASAN. HassanDavis.com. Okay, go over there. When you say you've been working with the ESAs, which I think is just great, I'm so glad I was able to hook you up there a little bit. Okay. I won't take credit for all the great work you've done, but I'm just thrilled that I was able to introduce you. Okay. When you go with the work with an ESA, what are you doing? Tell people about that, because that directly impacts schools.
Okay. So what the big piece of what's happened in the last year was the kind of the kickoffs and getting folk ready for back to school. And so a lot of district-wide or ESA-wide, you know, they're called so many different things across the country, but bringing all of their teams together for that, you know, that big push at the beginning. We're ready to get back to live, get back to serving kids and families. And so I've been kind of the primary motivational speaker in many of them. Right. A few of them have had first engagement and then said, okay, we want to actually look at what it looks like to work with you throughout the year with not just our administrators and leaders, but with our school teams, our families, and our students. And so there are a couple of them that I'm actually developing some long-term proposals for to be, you know, interjected across the school system. So I'm excited about that.
As well you should be, okay? And you said something there, real story. You said you were working with the Nebraska – tell me if I'm wrong here, the Nebraska Bureau of Prisons, did you say?
Or what? Probation and parole.
Probation.
Probation courts,
I knew there was a P word. I got probation and prison, you know. I mixed them up.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. This is interesting to me, okay, because you do a lot of work with kids and social justice, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And Nebraska is a fairly rural state, all right? Yet they are very they are concerned about what's going on with social justice with kids, like I assume.
Yes.
Okay. So just
they are.
And then put that into a perspective in terms of what educators need to know about this, because we have you certainly know this, Hassan. We've had this quote school to prison pipeline, which is horrible. We used to do school to college. Now we have school to prison. Okay, school
right.
to prison pipeline. Yeah, it's kind of nuts when you think about it. All right, so we have college and career ready, and then we have the school to prison pipeline. Hello, all right, just absolutely absurd. Just you know, what can I say? Talk about your work in there, and what schools need to know about that. That's really important.
Sure. So, what's interesting is that is actually the first part of a conversation I've had with every one of these education service agencies is I break down where education falls apart and the justice system becomes the primary holder of these kids. And so it really is. So my challenge, so you know, I used to be the commissioner of juvenile justice for the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
Oh, no.
I was vice chair of the Federal Advisory Commission on Juvenile Justice for the nation and territories for 3 years. And so I know juvenile justice and that entire framework really well. And when I became a leader in that work, what really frustrated me is that no one was talking about how kids got there, right? They were here and we got to deal with them, but how do they get here? And so I really unwound my system and started doing this deep analysis of all the things. And I always say, you know, if a kid is in juvenile justice, every other system that serves children and families will have to have failed for them to be in this hole. And
point.
So how do we walk it back up? Not in the way of saying it's all your fault, but how do we actually go back up and say, look, you know, if we start to do these things on the front end, we can actually eliminate this fall into failure, you know, that is the juvenile justice system on the back end. And so I don't want to get into the weeds and get caught up in the rabbit hole.
You're welcome to if you want to. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll keep it tight. So the three main drivers of of young people failing out of school, disability or experiencing disability, race, being a racial ethnic minority, and economics, being a student that experiences poverty at a deep level. And those three drivers, if we look at the data, young people experiencing those three are more likely to be suspended, to be restrained, to be isolated, to be removed from educational environments for whatever their quote-unquote problem is. And when that happens, they become the ones by ninth grade who are more likely to be dropping out of school, having failed so much. Young person who drops out of school is 3.5 times more likely to be arrested. They're 8 times more likely to experience jail, 63 times more likely than high school completing college-going peers to experience long-term institutionalization. Right, so immediately we see the frame. When education, we average about $200,000 a year per child we incarcerate. That's how much it costs per child to incarcerate annually, nationally. And if we start to break that down, it's ridiculous because education success actually reduces major felony counts across the board, all the major pieces. But here's the thing that I did. I did a cost-benefit analysis. I went to leadership and I started going to chambers and to rotaries and saying, look, do you realize we could send a child to an Ivy League institution with the full salary, paying their full tuition, put them up in a condominium right on campus, the best housing they have, give them a full-time valet, a full-time tutor, and a full-time chef to make sure they've got all the healthy stuff they need, and it still wouldn't cost the amount of money that you're willing to spend to lock them in a box for a year with no return on investment, no shift in their behavior, wow, their attitude, or their circumstances. And if you wow think that's what it means to be conservative, right, to say we're being tough on crime and absolutely missing the big picture of it, then we've got a conversation to have. And when I break that down to educators, that their work is actually the most powerful crime prevention and safety tool that we have in our communities, but they have not built a framework to have that conversation, to go to their legislators and do that. And so actually the first part of my introduction is always all of this data that I say, now I want to give this to you so that you know what the next conversation has to be when your congressman or congresswoman says, well, we have to be tough on crime, so we're taking more money out of schools to put into corrections, because it absolutely does not jive with the data, but it is the most popular framework and argument that has won folk office and doing nothing to really solve the problem
exactly
or support our amazing educators. That's my short version. But that's my
wow
story.
Good. I'm glad you went into the weeds on that. Well, that is I think I know the answer. What when you present those numbers to somebody? Okay, the logic is impeccable. Okay, what is their reaction? What holds them back? I can probably sum it up in one word: bias, prejudice, whatever you want to say, bigotry. Okay, do they really want to help? You know, I got to say something. We call it the Department of Corrections, but I wonder how much correcting is going on. Okay, because they may try, but it ain't the right place to do it. You said it best. Kids don't learn best when they're stuck in a box. Okay, even
that's
a
right
rat gets nervous in a box. Okay.
Right.
Okay. We treat animals. You know what I mean? It's unbelievable. And, you know, how could anybody not, how could they argue that if we put the money at the front end, okay, we're going to save the money twice over at the back end. What do they say? I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, you know, what's interesting is, so when I first started presenting this, you know, I would get things like, well, you know, you can make data say anything, right? That's always the deflection when you start to bring, you know, information to people. You can make data say anything just to discount it and blow it away. And so one of the things I did once, I said, well, I'm not going to say that you're wrong, sir, but how about this? How about I leave this data with you and we reconvene tomorrow and you come back and you make this data say that our children are safe, they're supported, and they're on the path to success. If you can do that with this data right here, then I will not come and bother you again. And nobody's been able to do that yet.
Yeah, of course not.
And so sometimes you have to challenge it, because that is usually just a dismissive way of not dealing with the problem. And, you know, I always say we have to go with the bad, the best available data. Whatever it is, it's the best we have. So if we actually act on it, we can generate new data that we can act on, which will be better. And then, so that's how we improve. But that's most of us in this conversation, they stop us there and then go, oh, yeah, well, you know, and we walk away. And that's not serving our young people.
No, it is not, and it hasn't been serving them for a long time. You know what's frightening about it? When you present this kind of data to educators, okay, the frustration level goes so high. Because what can they do? I mean, what can they do? They're not getting the support they need, okay? And I know the kids aren't stupid. That's for damn sure, okay? They just don't have the opportunities, all right?
And that's right.
It's just ridiculous. And all of this goes into the situation that we're in today with the teacher retention problem. A lot of teachers, at least 50% of them are thinking of leaving the profession. Okay, there's no teacher pipeline. And the reason for that is this is part and parcel. I saw a thing on the PBS NewsHour last night where schools, I think it was just in California, but I'm not sure, all have Narcan, the anti-fentanyl drug. They now have Narcan with the school nurse. It used to be she was worried if she gave you an aspirin, okay? And now we got Narcan because the kids are ODing on fentanyl, okay, the opioid.
Yeah,
you know, and when you think about what a teacher, what an educator has to go through, and it all comes down, especially in particular areas of the country, with social justice, okay? We are accepting of stuff that just doesn't work. It doesn't work. How many more years do we have to say it doesn't work? We just got to get through this. So when you talk to teachers, what's their reaction about this? Forget the legislators. When you talk to the ESAs, you're talking to educators. Okay, what do they say when you talk about all this?
Well, you know, it's been interesting. So one of the first reactions, right, because the last part of the data is I always come back, because I don't want to leave them saying, well, when school fails and then kids get screwed up really bad. But the rest of the last piece of the data says that, you know, a 5% increase in male graduation rates nets us billions of dollars in crime-related cost reductions. It reduces major crime categories across the board, across the nation. And so really educators are the antidote to this, right? And so I hit that home. And one of the things, that sense of affirmation that you really are the most powerful, most present, and most necessary part of our engagement for young people is something that they need to hear, and I think been excited to hear. I actually had a teacher, I was working with one of the intermediate units in Pennsylvania, and afterwards, one of the gentlemen came up and he said, you know, I have my resignation letter on my computer. I just came here because this was the last free, you know, conference, you know, professional development that they were giving. So I was going to take it, and then I was out of here. But I'm going back to my room, and I'm deleting that because you believe that I've got some more to give, and we're not done yet. And we just kind of sat there looking at each other, trying not to mess up these two big guys. But that's the kind of – because there's this validation that comes, not just saying schools are failing, But you have all the tools, and you're the very best we have. But we have to figure out the right argument to make sure everybody sees the amazing things you do. And that's a call to action we're starting to lean into.
Oh, without question, I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree with you more. And but I'll tell you, tell that little anecdotal story. You're going to heaven, Hassan. Okay, that's a good one. Okay, you saved that guy. I got to tell you, and saved probably a great teacher from leaving. And you know, but unfortunately, you can't be with every teacher who's got their resignation letter on the computer. All right. And it's really important. I'm going to say again, anybody listening, it's HassanDavis.com, HASAN. And by the way, Hassan, if you, I offer this to you all the time, you're welcome to write for us. Okay. In our Equity and Access Journal, we would love to have regular stuff from you. I just want to make that point.
Thank you.
Anytime. All right. That way, you know, not only are you writing for us and we're getting a lot out of it, but it gets you even more so out into the world of education. More people will learn about you. So I'd love you to do that and just write about all this stuff, kind of stuff we're always looking for. Okay. I want to talk to you. Let's change the subject a little bit. Okay. I didn't know you could draw. I'm going to figure this one out with you. We have a picture book called The Race.
Yes.
Okay. And it's about inclusion, belonging, and opportunity. Okay. And just what grade is it for? Who drew the pictures? What's going on here? Tell us about it.
You know, the artist, the illustrator, we commissioned the illustrator. I think he's from Thailand or Singapore.
Oh, wow.
And wow. So just kind of for, you know, someone to take the vision and put it down, and my publisher actually found them, and he's a professor.
Cool.
But and the images are so amazing. So the race itself started as a poem. I'm a poet. I grew up in a family of poets, and actually earlier this year I published my first book of poetry, and this poem I've been using for about the last 2 years. To intro in some of my keynote addresses. And people were like, well, that's interesting. And then I found some images online to kind of put with it. And then someone said, you know, you should really illustrate this. And since, you know, in the middle of COVID, I was at home a lot. I was really considering. And my publisher was like, you know, let's see if we can find something. And this, we found the artist and we started to put it in. So this is an epic picture poem, picture book poem. And it is the story of it. In some ways, it's my story. That's where I started. My own experience of, you know, being locked in the coat room in kindergarten and told this is where you belong because you're broken and useless and stupid. The experience of so many young people who are being told this is the best you'll ever get. So be happy that we gave you this. It's got a Dr. Seuss kind of rhythm to it, but it's about this young man who's, you know, in this contained classroom space, being told, be happy you're here, fit the round pegs in the square holes, life is good for you. But he finds a note in his pocket from his mom saying, you know, you're amazing. I can't make you believe that, but once you do, the world's going to open up for you. So don't forget that and keep looking for your escape path. And then, you know, he sees a window open. He didn't even know it was in the room. And here's the crowd from a race or some kind of event outside, and he makes a run for it. And he goes out and tries to be a part of all of that. And the people that are saying, you don't belong here. You've never practiced. You've never done this. So your place. But he gets a taste of it before he gets pulled back to his room. But at the end, you know, when he's about to say, well, I guess it's good they rescued me and brought me back here where I'm safe from myself and the world. But he remembers all the excitement out there and says, no, I think I'm going to get out of here again. And starts actively a plan to get out. And his last note to the teachers is, you know, I'm going to find my next race as he escapes again.
Wow.
And so it's just, it's been so well received, by the education, associations. It's been, teachers have loved it. A lot of the folks have started like purchasing them ahead of time and giving them as gifts or using them as giveaways. But I have just been really pleased because, you know, the story for me is so powerful, but the visuals, and the reception of it have been really incredible. So I'm just excited to have it out there and to have it. It's one of those things I've heard a few people say, you know, well, I'm going to give this. I know a young man or a young woman who's been struggling, and I'm going to give it to them as, you know, kind of way to say, I know you're struggling, but don't stop, you know. Yeah, I'm going to take a deep breath. I get excited, my friend.
That's good. It's all right. It's great.
It has been exciting to see the folks accept it and appreciate it. You know, I've been doing a lot of work with parent partnership groups, too, across the country, other big group, you know, who are really supporting, you know, families navigating disability systems. And in that same vein has been that real connection, because we know these stories. You know, the people that work in these environments know these stories and see these spaces and understand how important it is and powerful it is when we have a young person that finally says, no matter what all these differences is, I'm still going out there and I'm going to give it my best.
It's so darn important what you're doing. And, you know, I got to say something. We have those statistics before, and those are important. But sometimes I believe the anecdotal stories, okay, are the key to this,
mm-hmm.
okay, because they hit home, you know, and it's just when you do the storytelling, okay, not that, you know what I mean, it's story. So
I do.
People dig into it, et cetera. I have to tell you a story, speaking of stories, okay. My wife's grandmother, Now, this would be a woman who would probably be about 130 right now. Okay. Mm. Went to school in she's long gone, obviously, but she went to school back when in Darien, Connecticut. And she's always told this story. In an elementary school, there was exactly one black child. Okay. And the kids didn't really make a big deal out of that. Okay. It was just another kid in the class. And one day the teacher, this is back in elementary school, okay, said to each kid, go around the room. She said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the little black child stood up, a little girl, and she said, I want to be a doctor. And the teacher said to her, my grandmother-in-law never forgot this. Oh, honey, look at you. You could never be a doctor.
Wow.
She actually said that. Okay, now I'm talking about the year 1920, maybe. Okay, you know, earlier, 1910, probably.
Earlier, yeah.
Okay, not much of an excuse, but you get my point. Okay, but my grandmother-in-law remembered that story. Okay, her life, and she remembers the impact of that on that little girl. God only knows what only happened to her. Of course, she's long gone too. Okay, but.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be really aware of this stuff, and we are getting there more and more all the time. But, boy, the stories are just incredible. And, you know, getting back to statistics, I mean, the statistics you gave at the beginning, the $200,000 a year we're spending on prison, they can live a pretty good life for that $200,000 a year. I got to tell you, I don't know what's going on. It sounds good in the political ads. What can I tell you, Hassan? Okay, sounds like a tough on crime, you know, geez.
It does, but it absolutely is the opposite of what it provides for us.
It provides nothing.
Nothing at all.
All you have to do is look around.
I actually joked to the Secretary of the Public Safety Office, my boss when I was commissioner. I said, you know, if you all just gave me permission to give every kid that we have in the system $25,000 check, and then say, if you're not arrested again by the end of the year, I'll give you another $25,000 check, we'd be done.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, we would half the cost, right? And those young people would figure out things to do. They maybe get into micro enterprise. Even if they're just playing their PlayStation, they would do everything in their power not to be dealing with us in a year. And so the data is that the most powerful determinant of a young person's station of juvenile criminal behavior is actually getting to the age of 21 without having been caught up in the system, because the amygdala and the amygdala deforms in the brain, all of the frontal lobe develops, and they go, oh, that's not cool, and they walk away. But we get caught up and get stuck, and they never leave. Right, and so the less we touch them in that way, the less we connect them there, the more we keep them engaged in social emotional connection, creative engagement, opportunities to explore and expand their sense of who they are in the world and what they could be, the more likely they are as they get older. Even if they're a pain in our butt and they're doing little things now, if we could get away from just being that caustic, finality of the system, the data is there, the brain science is there. But again, it doesn't sell votes to get people, excited about help working with kids. You have to make them afraid for their lives and tell them that I'm the only one that can save you, even though it's a complete crock.
It sure is. You know, I was thinking as you were talking, we always saying we're going to throw money at the problem. Okay.
Yes.
Like you were saying, the $25,000, and you were saying, I'm thinking we always say we're going to throw money at the problem. I said, maybe we're going to start throwing money at the solution. You know, that might be a better way to do it.
Yeah. But when you start talking like that, they say that welfare, they say that it's a handout.
Yeah.
Which is odd, right? Because we're willing to spend $200,000 to lock you up.
Exactly.
But we're not willing to spend $1,000 to keep you from being locked up and to give you a balance. And so, I'm not going to get into, being a liberal or being, because every time I start talking, people are like, are you wearing Birkenstocks? Do you have like tree splinters in fucking trees? And I'm like, this is
I know him. Science. He doesn't wear Birkenstocks. He doesn't. You don't wear Birkenstocks.
Right. And this is real science, and this is the real truth of it. But it's been overshadowed by the opinion that this is a liberal idea or some kind of fantasy idea, that nobody can see it for what it is, an absolute opportunity that we're missing.
Right. Okay. It's funny. I was talking to a group actually down in Kentucky when you guys had the floods earlier this year, remember?
Yeah.
Those horrible floods.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to try. I'm just anecdotally telling this. A few of the school districts, okay, really wanted to add more SEL to help the kids be resilient as those schools were closed for a long time, et cetera. And because SEL mm-hmm. became, that phrase became politicized for a while. Okay.
Yes.
The more conservative areas didn't want to do it. And as I was talking to them, because they were very frustrated, I said, well, why don't you take the same thing, just call it flood relief training. Okay.
There you go.
Flood resiliency. Oh yeah. Now there's a good idea. Let's teach that, do the same exact thing. Okay. It's just,
yep. That's exactly right.
What can I tell you? It's just nuts. Hassan, this is great. I'm going to get back to you today. We want you to do more writing for us. If you want to, we would love that.
I would love it. Thank you.
Get your name out there more and more and more. We love having you on the show. So tell Dream, I'll let him write me. I really want to find out what's going on, okay? And you too. We'll get you back on.
All right. That sounds great, my friend.
Thanks, Hassan. Have a good day, good week. Happy happy Christmas time. Happy Kwanzaa, happy Hanukkah, and happy New Year. There you go.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, buddy. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Everybody, that's Hassan Davis, and he's a good man, Hassan Davis, Hassan, HassanDavis.com. Good guy, okay? And fun guy to hang out with, too. I know that for a fact. Okay, we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. Please see all we do over there. What he's talking about is important. It affects you guys every day in the field of education. So we want you to be happy. We want everything to work. We want it to be better. That's what we're trying to do. Hey, thanks for listening. I'm Larry Jacobs. Have a great day.